sitting with Ms. Virginia Diggs.
I'm busy.
Hello.
Oh, great.
Hello?
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I am Brian Halstos, and joined with my son, Tatum Halstos. And maybe, if you don't mind, if we could talk to start with where you were born and a bit about your parents and just kind of the early upbringing, if we could start there and go from there.
I was born in Chicago. My father was a doctor. My mother was a teacher before she got married and had me. And I have a sister who's in drama and now retired from drama, but she's doing in business with selling homes and stuff like that. She lives in New York and I live out here. And I've been here since, I don't even remember, I was out here in 1950 when my father died. So I was out here then. That was, I think, my first, that was my first year out here, I think. Then I went to Europe in 1960. I taught in Germany for 2 years. I loved every minute of it. I did a lot of traveling. I got through most of Europe, and I was very impressed with what I saw. I loved the Christmas fair that was held in Germany. I've been back there once since then.
Was this in the 50s when you taught there?
When I taught there, 50s and 60s.
Okay.
And then I went to Japan. I had 2 years in Germany, and I went to Japan for 1 year because I had to come back to L.A. I didn't have to, but I thought I did. But and I should have stayed, but I didn't. I loved it. I enjoyed Japan. I got to travel all over. And I've been to different places through Europe and Japan.
Were you
so
teaching?
I've enjoyed it.
Teaching on military bases?
In military bases. I was with the Army in Germany and with the Air Force in Japan. And I had the rank of second lieutenant. The teachers had that rank. And we could go to the officers' club as a result. Because if you weren't an officer, you had to go to the private and sergeant's restaurants and clubs. But we could go to the officers' club. We were officers, and we could eat there,
right,
which was nice.
And you said you would have liked to have stayed in Germany longer if you had it over?
I would have liked to have stayed in Japan maybe a year longer and then come back to Germany, or maybe stay in Japan, or go someplace else and teach. I could have gone probably to Spain, I think. But it was wherever there were army bases with families, with children.
Okay.
I mean, they also had other enlisted men and privates and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But we taught the children of the army personnel, regardless of whether they were privates or sergeants or majors or whatever.
And what were you teaching?
What grade did I teach? I taught fourth grade in Japan, and I believe, that's been some time, I believe I taught fifth grade in Germany,
okay,
if I remember correctly. So I taught fourth and fifth, but I was a high school trained teacher in history and English. But when I came out of school, they didn't have a need for teachers in high school in those fields, and those were the two fields that I would have been comfortable in, and that was my preference. But when
was
I couldn't get
school?
A job, yeah,
mm-hmm.
When I couldn't get a job in the high schools, then I went to elementary school.
Okay.
I started there as a sub, and then I was able to get a permanent job, and I was permanent anyway, but I had to be permanent in the grades as well as to be just being a sub. So I was a sub, and then I got a permanent job, and I stayed there. Then I taught fifth and sixth grade, mostly sixth grade, which I thoroughly enjoyed. My last school was South Shores here in San Pedro, which when I started for 3 years there, it was just a regular elementary school. But then they closed it, and we all thought we were going to have to look for other schools. but then they reopened it as a magnet school. And it was a magnet for the arts, drama, music, art. But it was a regular elementary school, too.
Mm-hmm.
We had those on certain days and certain hours. And I ended up being an art teacher as well as the drama teacher. And I enjoyed being the drama teacher. And I enjoyed being the art teacher. But I also taught the regular grade, too. We had those classes on the on Fridays, I think. It was Friday, if I remember. But I enjoyed it. I really that's a job I miss. And I don't
teaching
miss
teaching with that age. You like
teaching,
that age?
Yeah, teaching at that age. Since I couldn't teach high school, then I liked the older children. But I've taught every grade from kindergarten through seniors and in high school as a sub, mostly. But when I became permanent, then I ended up in the elementary school. And I had third and fourth grade, but I finally worked up to fifth and sixth grade. It's wherever the vacancies were in the schools, and I've been in different schools. But the last school and LaSalle Avenue, one school in L.A., those two are my favorite schools.
Okay. And when did you retire?
When did I retire? 1992. Yeah, 1992.
Okay.
So it's been 20 years.
Wow.
At least.
Okay.
And it was fine at first, but right now it's not. Under those circumstances.
Do you still see some of the kids you taught? Or do you
I run into them when I go to the market. I don't go to the market as much now because I'm in this, but when I was on a walker or a cane, I would go. I was able to go because I drove up until a couple of years ago, and I stopped driving because I knew I wasn't the good driver that I was that I used to be, and I knew that, so I just quit on my own and never went back. But in an emergency, I could, except that I didn't apply for the license this time.
Now, you mentioned your father was a doctor. Was he general practice, or what kind of...
Well, let's see, what was he? In those days, it was general practice, but he was a surgeon, and he was an obstetrician, both. He could do almost anything, and that they weren't as... you didn't have a designated job like you have more today. He was all over general.
Was he a Providence
Hospital
Providence.
In Chicago? Yeah.
Yeah.
He was there.
Okay.
We used to live on 51st Street, not too far from there. We could walk up there. It was about 4 or 5 blocks from where we lived. We just lived a block and a half from Cottage Grove, and we could walk to the hospital.
Exactly.
And that was nice.
Would he walk, or was he close enough?
Oh, no, he drove. My father never walked anywhere except on a golf course. No, and when they went to Europe, you know, or traveled, then, yeah, he would walk. But otherwise, he had his car, my mother had her car, and I had their cars when I was there. But mostly I used my mother's car, because Daddy always had his car. Because he was one of those doctors that would get up in the middle of the night and go to see a patient. They don't do that today. No one does it. But during the time that he was alive, he would get up out of his bed and go and miss the fairs that he and my mother wanted to go to if a patient needed him. And especially if the woman was having a baby.
Right.
Because he delivered babies too. But primarily he was a surgeon.
Was he gone most of the time then? Or was he not?
Oh yeah, he was gone. We'd see him in the morning when we were getting up going to school.
Right.
And we would see him every night for dinner, but when he came home at night, no, we were usually in the bed. But we liked ice cream, and we liked chocolate ice cream, and we'd tell him to bring us some ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd bring us ice cream, and we wouldn't remember that we had eaten it. And we'd tell him, you didn't bring us any ice cream. So my mother got so that she just left the dishes out on the sink so we could see that he had brought us. Most of the time we remembered, but there were times when we didn't.
Eating it half asleep.
Half asleep, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd eat it, and we'd enjoy it. And then we'd go out as a family, you know, on weekends. He played golf on Wednesdays and Sundays. But a lot of times, the three men that he usually played golf with, they had families, and we knew them. And on Sunday, we'd go to Sunset Hills, which is outside of Chicago, or we'd go to someplace else, I don't remember now. And the families would go and take picnic lunches, so we had a picnic almost every Sunday in the summertime, you know. But other than that, we saw him in the morning, maybe, if he didn't leave before we did, and we'd see him at night for dinner. And as we got older, we'd probably see him when he came home at night.
So if you're on 51st and close to Cottage, so you're close to Hyde Park, or were you just on the edge of Hyde
Park? We were right at Hyde Park.
Right in Hyde Park there.
Yeah, supposedly. It was in that area. Drexel, let's see, Cottage Grove was the main street with streetcars, and about two or three blocks over was Drexel.
Okay.
And that was within walking distance. And we go over there occasionally, but most of the time we lived across from Washington Park.
Okay.
So we would go to the park. They didn't have the bushes then that they have now.
Mm-hmm.
And we could go over there and ride our bikes and play with the kids in the neighborhood that we knew. And my mother could look out the window and see us.
Hmm.
But then as we got older, the bushes grew. And in high school, we could go over there for a certain time. She couldn't see us all the time, but she knew where we were.
Mm-hmm.
But as small children, we could go over, she'd take us across the street, and we could ride our bikes over there. Then we wouldn't be in anybody's way on our street, which was right across from Washington Park, which was easy.
Yes.
And we could come across the street. We weren't supposed to cross in the middle of the street, but you know, children, if nothing was coming, across the street you'd go.
Right.
There was a streetcar line
okay.
that went in front of our house, and that became eventually, it was still the streetcar line, but they went to buses from the streetcars.
Mm-hmm.
So that was nice.
What schools did you attend growing up in Chicago?
I went to Willard. That was the elementary school. I went to Inglewood, which was the high school. It was out of our district, but we used my mother's friend, who had two girls that we were very friendly with. We used their address and went out of the area to McCosh, or not to McCosh, to Inglewood, because my mother didn't like the high school that was in our district.
What high school was that?
That was DuSable.
DuSable.
Mm-hmm. She didn't like that one. So we went out there, which was nice. And we could walk home from there. It was an awfully long walk. But when you're that young, you can walk as long as you want to. And we used to walk from the high school to our friend's home, and we'd stay there for a while, and then we would take a bus. But most of the time, some of the time, we would walk home from their house too. That was a long walk. Wouldn't do that again now. So.
Were all, each of these schools all African American or predominantly African American, or were they
the
integrated?
Elementary school was, the high school wasn't. High school was mixed,
okay.
but not very mixed, but it was still mixed. We had a, well, by that time, yeah, it was more mixed than not mixed. And I guess it's all mixed now, I don't know.
It was primarily African-American, or was it?
It was primarily white.
Primarily white?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, DuSable was primarily black. In fact, it was probably all black, but we didn't go there. They had some incidences there that my mother didn't approve of,
okay.
and she was concerned. She and my father both. So we went to Inglewood.
Okay.
We got permission to go there. We had to get a permission from the Board of Education.
Mm-hmm.
So they got it, and we went to Inglewood.
Okay. Where did your mother teach?
She taught before she married. When she married my father, she stopped. She, where did they live? In Missouri, I think it was, oh, I can't remember now. Began with an L. Wasn't Louisville, because that's Kentucky. I don't remember. Lincoln.
Lincoln,
Lincoln something or other, but I don't know what. I don't remember. But she taught there till she married.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so your sister was 1 year younger than you are?
22 months younger.
22 months younger,
mm-hmm.
a couple grades younger
yeah.
than you are. Okay. And are you Presbyterian? Or did you grow up Presbyterian?
I grew up as Methodist. And I went to a college that was congregational. And in New York, I probably didn't go very often, but I went wherever I wanted to go to different churches. And when I came out here, I went to the Methodist church, and then my cousin had married a minister, so I went to his church, and that was non-denominational. And I moved, well, I lived with him for a while, and then I got my own apartment, and then I went to various Methodist churches, and I don't think I've been to a congregational church since I graduated. Maybe once, but I don't really remember where it was if I did go.
Right.
Because we were Methodists, except for my father, he was Baptist.
Okay.
But out here, I'd become a Presbyterian.
Okay.
The Methodist church that I wanted to go to was a little bit farther away. It wasn't in this area. And I was teaching school, and I was getting up at 5 o'clock every morning. And I just decided to go to a 10 o'clock service or a 9 o'clock service where I thought I would go. It would mean I'd have to get up that as early. And that was one morning. Saturday and Sunday were mornings that I slept in.
Right.
So the Methodist church is about 10 minutes from here. Not the Methodist church, the Presbyterian church.
Right.
So I went there on occasion, and they got some new ministers. And one minister in particular, I really enjoyed. So I joined. Well, he kept after me to join. So I joined. He stayed 1 year, and he left. And I was upset because I really liked him, and I rarely missed church. But he missed skiing. He was from the Seattle area, and he missed his skiing. So he went back to Seattle. So since then, there have been several ministers, most of whom I've liked. At least I've gone to church.
Okay.
So I've just done that. But I don't believe I've gone to a congregational church since I left college.
Okay. So you mentioned when you first went to college, you went to a college in New York? Where did you go? What year did you graduate from high school?
I graduated from high school in Chicago, and I went to University of Wisconsin for 1 year. And then I was home for 1 year, and then I went to Dubuque for 2 years. But I went in as an advanced sophomore instead of as a junior.
Okay.
But the following year I got the proper grade level. So I was a senior and I graduated from there. I enjoyed it.
What brought you to Wisconsin, and why did you not continue there?
I didn't continue there because my sister wanted to go away to school, and my mother wasn't ready for both of us to be away at the same time. So I stayed home, and she went.
Okay.
And then after that, both of us had been away from home. So she stayed away one more year, and then she came home, and I went away, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And we both went to New York University to get our master's. And she stayed in New York, and I came out here.
Okay.
Although I did go to Hartford first, and I taught there for a while.
And can you talk a little bit about what brought you to UD and what the story
here?
Is there? From you said you went to Wisconsin for 1 year, and then you went back to Chicago to be with your mom while your sister went to school.
Yeah.
And then you went to University of Dubuque.
Because my mother decided that I needed to be in a small school. And she was not, neither of my parents were that happy about my going to Wisconsin.
Why not?
It was too large school. And they just thought that we should be in smaller schools. And the college that my sister went to, in the name of which I can't remember, that was a small school.
Okay.
But she wanted to come back home. So she came back home and went to school. And I didn't want to come home. I wanted to be away at school. And then she came to New York. I went to New York first. She came to New York after she graduated, and she got her master's from New York University also, and she stayed. I stayed maybe for a year, and then I wanted to come to California. I'd always wanted to come to California. Mm-hmm. So when I graduated from college, my graduation gift from my parents was a trip to California. Mm-hmm. And we had cousins living out here. So I fell in love with California and Los Angeles, and I made up my mind I wanted to come. So while I was in Hartford, I applied, and I came out here. Right. And then I left and went to Germany. Or maybe I went to Germany after I... No, I went to Germany... No, I don't remember. Isn't that funny? Anyway, I went to Europe to teach, and I went to Japan to teach, and I went to Hartford, and then I came to California.
Why did you said your parents wanted you to go to a small school, and so your mother basically said she told you you're going to Dubuque? Is that what she said?
No, she didn't say anything. She just said we've got to find another college because I wanted to go away.
Right.
I didn't want to stay home. And she said, well, we'll find one. And how she found that one, I do not know, because I did not want to go.
Okay.
But I went. You know, if the parent says go, you go.
If you had your druthers, would you have gone back to Wisconsin?
Probably, but I also, my friends that were there were no longer there. Hmm. And I would have had to start from scratch. And I was going to start from scratch at Dubuque anyway. But I would have preferred going back, but I didn't have a choice.
Right.
My parents knew where they wanted to send us, and that's where you went.
When we spoke several months ago, you mentioned President Welch, actually, I believe, coming to your house. Is that correct?
That's what convinced my mother,
and
I'm sure.
You remember him? He drove out to your...
Oh, yeah, I remember him. Yes, he was tall and sort of big.
And
I remember him.
And did he drive to Chicago?
He came to the house. That's when my mother made up her mind that's where I was going to go. I had no say in it whatsoever. I don't regret it.
Right.
I had a good time there. I made friends there, some of whom I still have, some I don't know where they are. I don't know if they're still alive. But I get a letter every year from one of them. And one I used to see, because she lived out here, but she didn't live in the Los Angeles area. I used to see her periodically, but we've sort of drifted apart.
Mm-hmm.
And the others, I don't know whether, in fact, the only one that I know that's alive is the one that I get a letter from.
Who's that?
Marion Deicher. She's not Deicher now, but I don't remember her name. I'd have to get the letter. My memory's not very good.
Was she a roommate or a...
No. She was a freshman when I got there. She and the group were freshmen. And I came in as an advanced sophomore instead of as a junior.
Okay.
And, of course, I had to go during freshman orientation.
Hmm.
So that's when we became friends.
Right.
And there were six or seven of us that became friends. And we stayed friends for a long time, even after I left. After I graduated, I don't know whether the rest of them graduated or not. I know they stayed after I left for one or two years, but I don't really know how many of them graduated. And I've kept up with some of them, but some of them we just drifted apart.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them were from Iowa, and they were from small towns. And we were together. I went to visit, you know, on the weekends that we could, you know, get away. Trying to think where I went. Isn't that funny? It'll come to me after you leave. That's how it occurs.
Right.
But I do hear from one, Marion Skelly. I still hear from her. She and her husband. He's a minister. They've moved a couple of times. But I've saved their letters because I was going to write, but unfortunately, I don't write very well anymore. My handwriting, I can't even read it sometimes, and printing isn't much better. I have days when I can. So I do use my computer, and I use the telephone when I can.
Right.
And they keep in touch with me. We sort of stay in touch with each other once a year. Christmas time, a card or something like that. And we put little notes in as to what we've been doing or what's going on in life.
Right.
But that was a good group. I enjoyed being there with them.
So you travel to their homes and they travel, you go home for a weekend to get some home cooking or?
No, we didn't do that much. You had to have permission to leave the campus to go someplace.
Even on weekends?
It didn't make any difference. You were at the University of Dubuque, you stayed there. Now you could leave. A parent could come and get you, but you had to have a note from your parents that said you had permission to leave the campus and go someplace. Now we could leave the campus, we'd leave the campus and go to the movies in town, and we'd walk or we'd take the bus, whatever, we could do that. As long as we were back at the dorm at whatever time, I think it was by 9 o'clock we had to be in the dorm. Long as we were in the dorm, that was fine. You could go anywhere you wanted to go. You couldn't leave town without permission. So if you had permission, yeah, you could go. I had permission to go to Anamosa to visit with Nancy. In fact, I think 3 or 4 of us went there a couple of times. I had permission to do that. But each time I had permission, I had to get a letter from my mother or my father. Mother would put letters mostly.
Who was monitoring you to ensure that you were back when you're supposed to be back?
You're supposed to be adult, and you're supposed to be honest. And whoever was, what was her name, the girl's dorm, she knew when you were going, and she knew when you were supposed to be back. You were supposed to be back at 9 o'clock. Didn't make any difference. 9 o'clock, the doors were locked.
So kind of a house mother.
You had to ring the doorbell. And then you knew what was going to happen. So, and she had to see the permission that you could leave the campus to go out of town. As long as you were in town, that was okay. Because the town wasn't very big.
Right.
It may be larger now, but it wasn't that big. And there was no place to go except to the movies downtown. You didn't go downtown to shop because you didn't have any money. You had your allowance, and that was about it, and that didn't buy anything other than to go across the street to Goats. And we did that all the time, go over there and have hot hamburgers and Cokes.
Hamburgers and Cokes.
Hamburgers and Cokes. And you didn't need permission. If you were on punishment, you stayed on campus. You couldn't even cross the street. All you had to do was go across the street. Couldn't go to Goats. Stayed where you were on campus.
So Goats is a place you'd go for dinner. Would you go there just to hang out and socialize?
Yeah. We went there to have hamburgers in the middle of the day or just to go and have a Coke. You know, just to get off campus. Period.
Was it just a very basic a burger shop or?
I don't really remember. All I know is it was the shop across the street and the most of the kids would go over there. You know, if you didn't like what you knew what you were going to have for dinner, you'd go over there. Yeah. Or you could go there for lunch. Or, like on a weekend, we got sack lunches at lunchtime that we took. That was our dinner. Sardine sandwiches. Now you know. One does get tired of sardine sandwiches. I don't eat sardines now. But we ate them then, and it got to the point where we'd go across the street, as long as we were within the hours of being back on campus, and get a hamburger or something else to eat. Mm-hmm. It wasn't always hamburgers, but hamburgers were my favorite and still are, so I probably ate more hamburgers over there than I did anything else.
Would they serve malts? Did they have?
They had drinks, cold drinks. Okay. Coke was my drink, but they had other drinks. No liquor, you know, no alcohol or anything like that.
Right.
But it's not like today. I don't know about Dubuque, but some of the larger schools, I don't know what restrictions they had. But we had our restrictions, and we were to be home by 9 o'clock. You could go to the library, but you still had to be in the dorm by 9 o'clock.
Who would you usually be with? Other girlfriends, or would there be boys along, young men along, or would you meet faculty, professors
there? This was the during the Army days. Marlene?
I just heard her say hello.
Do I have? No, I guess I gave her my phone. we had the ASTP on campus, and they had their hours, and we had ours.
I'm sorry, ASTP?
That was Army.
Okay.
It was during the war period.
The V-12 program. That would,
yeah,
that
things like that, yeah. Right. And they would come to some of our parties, and they dated some of the girls and all, but I brought my dates for the prom from Chicago because there were no blacks in the ASTP at Dubuque. Now, they may have been someplace else, but they weren't there.
Right.
We had, and that was, well, the second year, there were two. Leroy, who I understand is dead now.
Leroy Watts, was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's dead, at least I heard he was. And Thornton, whose father was a doctor in Dubuque. What's his last name? I don't know. His father was a doctor. Was it Martin? I don't remember. He was a chiropractor, I think, but here again, I don't really remember. Those two came my second year there, which was my last year.
Okay.
And we didn't date. Oh, I think I dated Thornton a couple of times, but that didn't work out either with either one of us. And Leroy and I never really dated, I don't think. Well, I was too busy running around with my friends, and he was busy running around with his friends. But we saw each other, we spoke, we were together a lot of times at different gatherings, you know, at the university. But I didn't do much dating there.
His name was Thornton, and his father was a chiropractor in Dubuque?
He was, I don't know what, he wasn't a chiropractor, that was the wrong word, what was he? I don't know, foot doctor.
Oh, podiatrist?
Podiatrist, I think. My memory for that is not that good. I don't really remember, all I know is his father was a doctor, and I think it was one of the two, and he came there while I was there my last year. And after that, I don't remember. Now his older brother married one of our friends. My sister and I had, well, where we lived on 51st Street, there were streets that had alleys. And one of our friends lived across the alley. And we all played out in the alley. We could play in the backyard because Mother and Daddy owned the building. But the other people that we played with were renting in other buildings, and children could not play in the yard that much. But everybody came to our yard because we couldn't leave our yard. We had to stay put. Once we got bicycles, we could ride up and down the alley and go maybe in the next alley and around the block if we were good. Most of the time we were in the yard, and they were there. And she married his older brother, Bob. And Bob is still alive, but he and Odette are in a facility for older people. And neither one of them are well. And he's well into his 90s. He was in the Army, and I can't think of, oh dear, the Tuskegee Air Force. Yeah, Air Force Airman. And he's got to be in his 90s. And she's probably in her 80s, I think. Because she and my sister were close. So both of them are in a retirement facility.
Right.
So,
and Thornton, you don't know if he's still living or not.
I haven't heard anything about him. And I just found out that the husband of one of the gals that used to run around with us died, and I didn't, in fact, two of them, and I didn't know that. The girls are still alive, as far as I know. I used to stay with one of them when I would come to Dubuque to visit. I came for my 50th anniversary, and when was I there again? I was there, that was the last time I was there. And things had changed drastically. 25th? I think I was there for the 25th anniversary of my graduation. And one of the girls lived the one I went to visit, Nancy lived close by. I've forgotten the town she lived in. Right now, I'll probably think of it after you leave, but I can't think of it now. And I stayed with Nancy, and we would go to Dubuque, but she would never spend the night. She didn't like to stay in hotels. So we would stay there until the festivities were over, and then we'd drive back to where she lived, which wasn't that far. And she lost her husband. I just found that out at Christmas. And Pat lost hers. I think the last time I saw Pat, when I was there for my 50th anniversary, I think she had lost her husband just before that. And the rest of the group, I haven't heard from in years. Mary and I hear from. Nancy I hear from. I used to call her more often. And I should call Pat. I haven't called her in a long time. But Marion is the one that I hear from once a year. She's married to a minister. And they send out a very nice letter at Christmas time. So I kind of keep up with them because they live in Iowa nearby. So they would see each other more often than I would. Right. So I've only been back there twice.
Okay. And things have changed. If you were there in, I guess, 97 would have been your 50th, graduated in 47, is that correct?
I graduated in 47.
So if you came back for your 50th, 97, and things have changed dramatically since then.
Well they had changed dramatically since I was there the last time, or even for 25 years. Mm-hmm. It had changed, and I was glad to see that there were more people other than Caucasians.
Right.
There were blacks there, Mexicans.
Right.
So forth. So I was glad to see that. It was a nice college. It was small and it was nice and I enjoyed it.
Right.
I really did. I had a good time there.
Do you remember where you lived on campus?
Severance Hall. That was the only dorm for women.
Okay.
Severance Hall. Stephens was the male, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember when you first came to Dubuque and your impressions at that time? Do you have any?
I wanted to go home.
I wanted to go home.
It was my mother's choice of a school, not mine.
And what changed your mind, do you think?
What changed my mind was the people that I met. They were friendly. I was the only black person there. And I did not know what I was getting into. Well, I did know, but I didn't realize until I got there. Because according to the president, this was a wonderful school, actually. Everybody was very friendly, actually. All of the good things. I did not know that I was going to be the only black person there.
Really? You didn't know that going in?
If I did, I don't remember. All I know is I got there and they put me in the nurse's office, which was a small room with one bed. The gals that I ran around with were upstairs with everybody else. And I was downstairs with some upperclassmen who were down there.
On the main level?
On the main level. You walk in, you go up a few stairs, and you go into the dorm section. And that's where I was, in a small room, one bed, a dresser, and a closet. And it wasn't a regular closet because it was a nurse's closet. And that's where I was for 1 year.
For 1 year.
So I would go to the bathroom, and there were sophomores or juniors or seniors in there. And I was a freshman and different. I got along, you know, and I got used to it. It didn't, at first it bothered me because I knew what it was. And therefore that bothered me. And I was mad at my mother for making me go there. That didn't last long. It wouldn't make any difference anyway. I was there. But after I met the freshmen that I ran around with all the time, I had a good time. You know, they were friendly, I was friendly. We liked the same things, and we weren't necessarily in the same classes, but we had a good time together. We obeyed the rules and we disobeyed the rules, like all college people do. So I had a good time. My second year, I was able to go upstairs. So I went upstairs to the third floor, where my friends were. and I was there, and then...
Did you have a roommate that year?
Didn't at first, but then a black girl came, and they put her in my room.
Who was that?
I don't remember her name. We weren't friendly. We were friends, but we weren't close friends. And she was only in the room, I called it my room. She was only in the room for maybe 2 months because she had come from Galena with two friends who were white, and they were living down the hall. And one of them went home, and she decided she wanted to go down and room with her friend. And I said, okay, that's nice. You should be with your friend. I'll help you move. So I helped her to move. We were friends, but we were different. Well, that's regretted. I was annoyed, you know, but it was part of the experience. And growing up, you have many experiences, some that are good and some that aren't good. And some you'll always remember, whether they're good or bad, and some you'll forget. And I remember most of the good things about being at Dubuque. I had a good time. I had good friends.
Do you remember being made to feel different on campus because you're...
Mm-hmm. No. Maybe by some people, but if I did, I don't remember it. I was in a group. We had a good time together. Mm-hmm. If you didn't like one, that's too bad. Mm-hmm. You got all seven of us, regardless of how you felt about one. We were always together.
It was a group of seven.
I don't know. I don't remember how many. It could have been seven. It wasn't more than seven. I know that.
Right.
But even those that were dating, some of the boys that were on campus, didn't make any difference. And most of the ones that were dating the fellows from Nicaragua. And they were friendly. Hmm. They were very friendly with everybody, you know. So, and they spoke their language, but they also spoke English. And we all had a good time. We did a lot of things together. We picnicked together on Sundays when you didn't have to go to the Commons to have dinner because they gave you a sack lunch of sardines. If I never see a sardine in life, it would be too soon. Yeah. So it was, you know, it was nice. Because we'd go out, where would we go? I don't know where that was. I don't remember the name of the park. It was nearby.
Eagle Point?
Eagle Point. We'd go up there on Sunday afternoon and stay, because you could go up there, and we would take our sack lunches, and we would eat up there. Nice. And that was fun. And then we'd come back down, you know, as it began to get dark. But that gave us some free time.
Do you remember ever feeling uncomfortable out in the town itself or being made to feel unwelcome by the community?
You know, I don't really think so. I don't remember. Well, the only place we went really was to the movies. Mm-hmm. That was the only place we really went to. I don't remember eating at a restaurant there. We didn't have any money. That was the main reason, probably. You had an allowance, but it wasn't enough to go to a restaurant, a nice restaurant at any rate. We might have gotten a hamburger or something like that, but I don't remember. Most of the time, if we wanted to eat different food, we went to the Goats, and we had sandwiches, and I always had a hamburger. Mm. That's my favorite hamburger. And that's where I took my parents when I graduated. I took them over there. My father wanted to see where the Goats were. I said, Daddy, there are no Goats there. That's the name of the restaurant. It's the campus restaurant. And I took Mother and Daddy over there, and then my sister came, and I think one other friend came. And we sat there, and we had lunch there. And then, because I had the family car, for the last week I was there in Dubuque. And by that time, Daddy had two cars, and he and my mother and sister and friend, which one Francis, I think, drove up in his car, because I had the family car, and then we drove back together. by that time we could leave, and I was already packed up, and that that had to be sent was sent. And I think we left the next day. And Mother and Daddy stayed in town at one of the hotels, probably, which was the most popular one connected with the university, was the Julian, I think.
Hotel Julian.
Yeah, well, that's where they stayed one night. And then we came home all together.
Do you remember?
It was nice.
Do you remember what car you were driving at that time?
Yeah, a Buick.
A Buick.
Mm-hmm. And Daddy had a Chevy. And maybe we had those two cars for a long time. But when I started working different places, and especially when I went to Germany, I bought my own car, and I bought a Mercedes, which I kept for 12 years, and I wish I still had it. And since then, I've had several different cars. All of them have been foreign cars. I've never had an American car. I've driven American cars, but I've never bought one. But yes, I did. My first car that I bought was a Mercury. It was a new Mercury. What was it called? I don't know. I just remember it was red with a white top, because red's my favorite color. You'd never guess it.
With a red shirt on.
Yeah. So I had that for a while. And what did I have after that? I don't know. When I went to Germany, I got the Mercedes, which I kept for 12 years. And then what did I get? Well, I've had a BMW. I got that, I guess, next. And I've had a Volvo. I've had only foreign cars. And I've got a Honda now, which I don't drive. But I gave up my license.
Okay.
You know, you come to a certain stage in life, and you know what you can do and what you can't do. And I knew I was a good driver. But I also knew I was no longer a good driver. And when I got to that, where I was no longer a good driver.
Tim, could you give me a little more water, please?
I'm sorry. I should have been paying attention. When I knew I was no longer a good driver, I stopped. Okay. And when my license ran out, I didn't renew.
Okay.
So.
My mother is no longer driving, but it's because her memory is disappearing, and she was getting lost on a consistent basis. And so she's. It's been frustrating for her.
Oh, I'm sure, because it's frustrating for me even now. I knew I was a good driver, but a friend of mine got sick, and I had to drive to Carson, to the hospital where she was. And I knew as I went up and down Western, I knew better than to get on the freeway. Go up and down Western, I knew as I was driving, and Western was torn up then. I said, you know, continue to go while your friend's in the hospital, because I was there every day. She just lives down the hall from me. I met her in Japan. And I said, when she gets out the hospital, will you give up driving? Oh, yeah, maybe. Well, they moved her to the hospital down here. That was easy to get to. But then after that, I said, I know better. I drove her around until she was able to drive again. And when she started telling me, you're too close to the yellow lines, get over to the right. Or you're too close to the cars on the right, get over to the middle. I said, then obviously it is obvious. And I knew it. I knew it even before then. So I stopped.
Right.
I stopped. It was easy. But, if you'd like to open those blinds, all you have to do is push them back if the sun won't bother you. You can see the view.
He's plugging his phone and he's making sure the battery's charged. So
that's all right. It's perfectly all right. I don't blame him.
Now, when you're at UD, I was reading something that you were involved actively in the YWCA.
Mm-hmm.
Is that? Could you speak a little bit about that and what you remember about the?
I know I was. I think I might have been secretary, but I can't remember.
Right.
We had the meetings. It was, you know, like a regular college meeting. But I really don't remember too much about that. But I came across the two albums that I had not too long ago when I was cleaning out a closet. And I started going through them, and I fell out laughing. I laughed, and I said, I can't remember doing this. Did I really do this? Did we really do all these things? Did we really look like this? What a change. But it was fun. So I enjoyed that. And I said, well, I'll keep those and my sister can get rid of them when the time comes. Hmm. Or she can keep them. But she's so close to me that maybe she'll live longer than I and maybe she won't. I don't know. Hmm. But it was a good experience.
Do you remember being class secretary? Was that, in, I think, your senior year you were class secretary?
Of the Y.
Of the Y? Okay.
Was I class secretary?
I think you were class secretary of
the class.
Of the class.
You know, that does sound like, that does sound familiar. How come I didn't see that in the album? I have to go get those albums again and look at it. I think I was, now that you mentioned it. Thank you. I've forgotten a lot of things. A lot of things.
Do you remember a fire during the time you were in school? There being an October fire? Does that ring a bell? Okay.
No. Was there one?
I was, before I came out here, I went through some of university has a folder that has some materials like communications you've had with the school, and one of the forms you filled out, one of the things you remembered was an October fire. This is probably 1974 when you filled out a form kind of responding about your memories of school, and that was one of the things you mentioned at that point. But
I don't remember a fire. How would I remember that? Unless we were doing something that we shouldn't do. Which is possible. Mm. But I really don't remember. As I say, unless we... Well, my memory's not very good anymore, but...
I wonder if it may have been a bonfire. Perhaps it was a bonfire?
It could have been. It could have been anything.
Right.
Well, no smoking was allowed. Hmm. You could smoke off campus, but you couldn't smoke on campus.
Both for men and women, it was consistent.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was consistent. Some of us smoked and some of us didn't, but we never smoked on campus.
Right.
And I did smoke, I know that. But always it was at the Goats. It was never anyplace else because you weren't allowed to smoke.
Right.
And maybe you're allowed now, but you weren't when I was in school. And we never smoked. Oh, Lord, no. You get tossed out quicker than you expected. You graduate from there very quickly.
Right.
No, I don't remember. I don't. Now, maybe I did then when I was talking, but I sure don't remember it now. So I don't know.
Do you remember? Do some faculty stick out? Do you have any special
My history members? Professor.
Okay. Who was that?
I knew you were going to ask me that.
I have some names. There's a Robert Smith, a Dr. Hertz.
Yes, the Dr. Hertz, I think, was the history teacher because I was a history major. Robert Smith was the minister. I liked him. And you had to take Bible lessons then. Do you still have to?
Nope. There's a Judeo-Christian Journeys course that all students need to take.
We had to take Dr. Smith's class, whether you wanted to or not.
What was the class?
Bible class.
Bible class.
You studied the Bible. In fact, we read it from, well, I had to take it both years I was there. You started at the beginning and you went to the end of the Bible.
Both Old and New Testament?
Everything. He was excellent. I enjoyed him. I enjoyed his classes, but I also enjoyed him as a person. Dr. Hertz was my history professor. There were one, two, three, there were about five or six of us in his class. And unfortunately, he found out that I was a history major. Anytime nobody could answer a question, I would have to answer the question. And I thought, good grief, he's going to make me learn history whether I want to. Most of the time I could keep up with him, but I couldn't always. But, oh, that's all right, mistakes, that's all right, mistakes. And then he'd go ahead. He was German, and he had an accent. But he was, those two were my favorites. Anna Aitchison was the English teacher. I liked her. And Fox, Dean Fox. He was nice. I don't remember what he taught, though. But I remember him. Those four I remember. I don't remember any others. I remember her because she was an English teacher. Oh, there was another one. I probably shouldn't say this, so I won't. I can't remember his name, but what did he teach? Everybody liked his class, and the girls liked to sit in the front. I didn't. I never liked to sit in the front, even now. Girls like to sit in the front. He was very nice. He was big. What was his name? Something. I can't remember his name. I liked him, but he was up on cloud nine. Don't say I said so, but he was up on cloud nine. You had to really think about what he was saying to you and how he listened to you. And if he asked you a question and you answered it, that you got an A. So everybody studied up to at least get one A. I remember that, but I can't remember his name. But he was very nice. I can't remember his name. Isn't that funny? Those four I remember. Miss Aitchison. And I assume that most of them are dead by now, I would think. I don't know, because some of them were older than a lot of college people, college teachers. At least in my opinion, they were, I thought, from the ones that I had seen.
Do you remember, so you're a history major, do you remember what courses Dr. Hertz taught or what courses you took from him?
I didn't like American history. I always took ancient history, medieval, and whatever came after medieval. Modern, I guess you'd call it. But those classes were the ones that I took. I was a history major. And I think I did have to take an American history class. But I was more interested in the earlier history, the European history.
Was he teaching all of the history courses?
As I recall, I don't think there weren't that many teachers there. There are probably more now, if there are more students, there are probably more teachers.
Mm-hmm.
But there weren't that many, I'd have to look in my book and see how many teachers were there. But those are the ones that I remember that I had.
Right.
And I remember them. But now then, what, Fox? Dr. Fox. He was more than just a teacher, I think. But I don't remember. Somewhere, he might have been the head dean or whatever. I don't remember. But he seemed to be a little higher as far as categories go. But I liked him. But Dr. Hertz was my favorite. He and Dr. Smith were my favorites.
Was it Dr. Hertz part of what inspired you to be a history major, or do you remember why you chose to be a history major?
No, I decided in high school I wanted to major in history because I wanted to teach, and I didn't want to teach anything but history, but I knew I'd have to have something else, so I chose English because I thought that would be easy. Which it was, up to a point, and I've taught sixth grade, which was as a regular teacher, sixth grade is the highest grade I've taught. But I've taught kindergarten through high school. But my high school was mostly as a sub.
In high school, what was it about history that inspired you to major in that? Or do you remember why history?
Well, I just was interested. It was just one of those things. I got interested in ancient history and medieval first. American history, no, because I got that in school. And I preferred the ones that I hadn't learned that much about. Because in high school, you don't get all of that. So I knew I wanted to be a history teacher,
right,
and an English teacher. But history was my major. English was my minor.
I don't know if I explained, but I teach history at UD. That's my focus. And I'm the only full-time history professor at UD right now. And when I came 3 years ago, there was no major and no minor. They had gotten rid of both the major and the minor in history about 15, 16 years ago when the school was in pretty rough, close to closing down. And now it's doing so much better. I mean, the enrollment from 15, 16 years ago was down to about 600 students, and now we're up to about 1,800 undergraduates. And so when I came in, I was easily explained to me that they're hoping that I could reintroduce the minor and the major. And so we now have a minor in place. I've got that through the committee, and I just turned in the paperwork for the major, and I'm hoping that we'll have a major back on the books before too long. And so I have students that are counting on this and working toward the minor and working toward the major as well, in expectation of when that is official again.
Oh, are you in American history or European?
Mostly U.S. history, yeah, mm-hmm. is kind of my focus. Although I'm teaching a lot of the courses I teach are World Civ courses in ancient history, which I enjoy. It's fun to be pushed in new directions and learn new things.
I enjoy those histories. American history I got in high school, and that was interesting, and it was okay, but it was something that I had to take, or something that was taught and I had to take it. Whereas with the European history, I didn't know that much about it, and I wanted to learn about it, and it wasn't something I had to do. It was my choice.
Right.
That might have been it. But it was really, for me, it was more interesting. I don't remember any of it now, I'm sure. I've never taught history.
Right.
I taught, in the fifth and sixth grade, there was a certain amount of history you taught, but it was American history or South American history. Oh, I loved the South American history. American history, I taught, but I didn't have the feeling about it that I had, about the other. And then we became departmentalized, thanks to me, in the sixth grade only.
Okay.
Fifth and sixth grade, because I taught up here at the Magnet School. And I decided that I had three teachers that became very close friends, and I suggested, why don't we divide up the subjects and become departmentalized? Because we're teaching fifth and sixth grade, and the sixth grade is going to go to junior high, and the junior high has many teachers, or several teachers that they go to, and the next group coming along, the fifth grade will be in our grade, then they'll go. So we had a principal that was willing to listen, and I went in and presented the program and told him what each teacher wanted to teach. Somebody else took the history before I could take it, and that's what I wanted. So I took the English, she took history, another teacher took reading, which I didn't like teaching, and the other teacher took math. And I wasn't that fond of math either. But I could have taught it if I had to, because I did up until the time that we became departmentalized. And the principal said, okay. So we did, and we presented it to the parents. Mm-hmm. And some of them, no, some of them, yes. So we did it anyway. Mm-hmm. Most of them said yes. And we did that for the rest of the time that I taught, and that was a good 3 or 4 years, plus the fact when we became a magnet school, we were South Shore became the my memory. Anyway, we taught advanced students as well as in our grades, the fifth and sixth grade. And we were departmentalized like high school. And we said it was a good experience, and everybody chose their subject. So we did that. While it was still a magnet school, we had this special program where we had classes in art, in drama, in dance and music. And I got the art, and somebody else had drama that was only there 1 year, and then I got the drama. And I had art and drama, but mostly the drama. And the other teachers, and this was school-wide, so that was nice. It became a magnet school. Okay, we did art shows at our school, and then the district had art shows, and we participated in those, and I participated in them. We did, well, I did paper mache. I like paper mache. So we made an elephant. That was a chore. That was an experience, making that elephant. But it happened to be the hit of the show that particular year. Then we had drama, and we were able to put on our plays at Dominguez Hills, the university. And I got to be the director because I had the drama class. And we put on all kinds of different shows. One of our teachers was a music teacher, and she wrote a play which we put on. And I did all the drama, she did the music. We had one teacher who did the art, one who did the sets, and one who taught the music and played the music for the whole play, because some of our plays were musicals. We did a lot of good work. And I got, but I, to go into a real theater, I put on my plays in an auditorium, school auditorium, you know. You come in the afternoon and you see the program, and then you go home. This was like a Broadway production, and I told my children, I said, hey, this is not a school program. This is a Broadway production. Well, maybe not quite Broadway, but off-Broadway. Same difference. Laid down all the rules and regulations. If you couldn't follow them, you couldn't be in the play. If you didn't learn your lines, you couldn't be in the play. You come and try out. So we had tryouts, the music teacher, the dance teacher, and I. We held auditions in the school auditorium. And we decided who would be able to do what. And those that we knew couldn't do anything, maybe they could help with the sets or something like that, but as far as acting, no, they wouldn't be able to do that. Okay, we chose those that did. And some of them were very, very good, and some were just good, you know. I mean, they're children. And we didn't expect to have an adult program, but as I told them, I do expect to have a good drama program, period. Right. The rules were, you didn't talk, you acted, you came off the stage, you came on the stage, just like adults do. Mm-hmm. And they bought it, right straight down the line. And we did all kinds of plays that were very good, I thought, and then the music teacher wrote a play. We did that, that was very good. Mm-hmm. In fact, we got nothing but praise, beginning with the first show that we did. And it was better than a show than somebody else had done the year before us.
Wow.
And she retired, though. She was more of a art teacher than she was a drama teacher, but I guess she knew the right people.
She made quite an impression on those students, too. I mean, I wonder, it'd be interesting to see how many of them, that was kind of sparked an interest in the arts that has lasted since then.
Yeah, for some of them, and we always let our school see it. That was our practice rehearsal. The whole school could come to the auditorium over there, Dominguez Hills, and they would see it, and that gave our children the opportunity to present something to somebody in the office, even though they were classmates. And we had parents that helped with sets, that helped with backstage, keeping the kids quiet, and in the green room where the actors all sat and keeping them amused, you know, that sort of thing. And they helped off stage a lot. And that helped. It was a good experience. My theory was that it was good experience for the audience. It was good experience for the children that participated in the play. It was good experience for the children who were stagehands. And we had a marvelous stagehand. He taught me a lot, because what do I know about doing theater, other than the auditorium. And he laid down the law of the auditorium rules and regulations, and I was afraid of him. And I thought, oh, good grief, what have I gotten myself into? And I didn't know anything about calling cues or any of those things, because I would be on stage to call cues and, you know, get the kids to do what they're supposed to do, get them on and off the stage. He taught me all of that, and I sat there, and I had my play, he had his play, and we sat there, and he told me what to do as the kids were acting, and how to do this and how to do that, and I kept my script marked. By the time I finished and I left when I retired, he congratulated me. And he was not the one that gave many congratulations, but he did. He said it was a pleasure working with me, and that I had followed all the rules that the school had, plus they saw to it that they followed my rules. And he made me feel good. He really did. And I was, the one thing I missed when I retired was the plays and putting on the plays.
Mm-hmm.
And we did several, Hansel and Gretel we did, and we did Peter Pan, that was my swan song. We did The King and I, that was the best one. I wish I had done The King and I for my swan song, but I was impressed with Peter Pan and I loved Peter Pan. So, and everybody at school knew that when I said I was gonna do Peter Pan, that was it, I was retiring. And I said, Peter Pan, you're retiring? I said, Peter Pan's the play, I'm retiring. So I retired. But I really enjoyed teaching at that school. There were two schools that are my favorite, LaSalle Avenue and South Shores Magnet School for visual and performing arts. I really enjoyed that.
Now, did you have theater experiences in high school or at UD? Were you part of the drama club? No.
My parents gave my sister and me drama lessons. One teacher, one student at a time, and we did monologues. We weren't in plays. We belonged to a club we call the Bluebirds. I don't remember if we were in, we must have been in elementary school, high school we wouldn't have done that. We were in elementary school. And we put on several plays for our parents and our parents' friend, you know, that sort of thing. But we had one parent who, she was a chaperone, and she was the one that got us into doing the plays. And I enjoyed that. So did my sister. We both enjoyed that. My sister wanted to be an actress more than anything else. And she was for a while, but she retired from that. Well, she got into show business. Not only as an actress, but then she worked with Johnny Carson and, oh, I can't remember offhand, but she did work with some of the big people and some of the shows that they're no longer on now, but she worked with them. And Gary Moore, that's who she started with. She started in The Office and ended up getting into some of the more professional things and just being the secretary and running around helping people.
Right.
But that was okay. So she enjoyed that. And I guess we both enjoyed being in the plays when we were youngsters. But I never thought about it as an adult until I got to Magnet School. And I did school plays, you know, for fun, for the kids. But as far as going into acting or being a director or something like that, that never entered my mind. But then when I got to this school, and after 3 years it became a magnet school for visual and performing arts, then I was one of the art teachers, and I watched the play that a parent who supposedly knew a great, a parent who was interested in drama and had done some drama herself and been in plays. And she was the drama teacher, but she wasn't a regular teacher. She came in. And I saw what she did with little Abner, and I decided I think I'd like to try that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like little Abner. I thought that would be fun. So I did art and I did drama. And I did drama for the rest of the time that I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there for, 9 or 10 years, something like that. So if it was 9 years, I was a drama teacher for 8. And if, 9 or 8 years. If I was there for 10 years, then it would be 9 years. Because the first year, no, I didn't do the drama. It was nice.
Right.
And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I really did. And I thought, oh, maybe I should have gone into directing instead of teaching. But we taught anyway. We taught and had plays.
Right.
They were very good.
When speaking, when we're on the topic of the arts, when you were at UD, did you participate in the choir, the concert choirs?
No, I'm not a singer.
Not a singer?
No, I'm not a singer. I didn't do... If they had plays, I don't think I ever tried out for a play. I don't think so. I don't remember. And I don't remember doing anything different. But maybe I did, and I just don't remember. I'd have to go and look at the books, which I just found not too long ago. They were in a trunk that I had when I was in school, and I hadn't fully unpacked everything. And I guess when I got here, I started unpacking different things. And I eventually unpacked that trunk, and I found 2 of the books, the school books. The
yearbooks.
Yearbooks. And I looked through them, and I had to laugh. It was fun to see them. It was hard to believe that we all looked that way when we were young, you know. And I still have the books. I haven't looked through every page like I had planned to do, because I've been too busy doing other things. But those are books that I'm not about to throw away, and I will keep. And when I go to the great beyond, my sister can do with them whatever she pleases. But I will have been through them. I've been through most of the 2 that I had, through most of it. But you know how you flip the pages and you see, oh yes, oh, did I do that? Did I look like that? Whatever. But it was fun. It was fun. But I haven't been back since my 50th year graduation.
Did you have photos from the time? Did you have a camera at school and take photos, or did you ever have photos?
Oh, no, I always had a camera, and I always took pictures. And don't ask me where the pictures are.
Oh.
They're in a photo. I have so many pictures and slides from when I was in Europe and Japan, and I have them from when I was in high school and college. So I have all kinds of pictures, and I keep saying the ones from Europe were slides, where everything else was a plain photograph, black and white, and then eventually Technicolor. And I have not been through a lot of those recently, but I plan to do that. I'm not getting any younger, and I decided I better clean out this place and find things that I really wanted to keep, that my goddaughter, Marlene, can put on the computer for me. And some of them I will be able to keep, but some of them I won't. And I still have pictures that I took with my camera when I was in college. But here again, they're like the pictures from high school. They're in books, and I haven't been through those books. But I will get through them before it's too late, I hope. Yeah.
I remember, part of what prompted the interviews we've been conducting over the past several months, where I'm preparing for an exhibition in the fall that's going to celebrate 100 years since the first African-American students came to UD, and it was Saul Butler and his brother Benjamin Butler in 1915.
I remember, my father knew Saul Butler, but I didn't realize he had a brother. I thought Saul was the only one that went.
He came with his older brother, Ben. That was part of the deal. Was Saul was sought after by a number of schools because of his incredible track skills and football skills. And so he said that, I will come to UD if you allow my brother to come with me, and his older brother. So he and Ben Butler, who was their father's name was Ben, so he was Ben Jr., came to UD in 1915 and were there. And Saul was the only one who graduated in 1919. His brother was there for most of the time, but there's no record of his having graduated. You see your father. Your father. How did he know him?
Well, he was a young man. He was in medical school. He probably heard of him. And if he came to Chicago, Daddy was one of the physicians that treated the athletes, different athletes when they came and were there in Chicago. But he never said anything about a brother. But the only thing he said anything about was he knew that Sol Butler had been there, because I didn't want to go to Dubuque. I wanted to go to a different college. And my mother said, you're going there. She liked what Dr. Welch had said. And Daddy went along with her. He said, okay, fine. But he's the one that told me about Sol Butler.
And so he knew, do you think that Sol Butler's having been there might have been what, how your parents were aware of the school?
No, I don't know. I don't know how they were aware of it. Daddy wasn't probably. Mother took care of all of that because he was busy doing his thing. I don't know how my mother, I don't remember how my mother found out about Dubuque. But I know Dr. Welch came to see her and talked her into it. I said, he's a good person to talk you into something, evidently.
Right, right.
But that was not my choice.
Now, did you meet Sol Butler yourself?
No, I never heard of him. That was before my time, and I wasn't interested.
But your dad had said that,
well,
oh, that's where...
He didn't say that either. Hmm. It was when Dr. Welch was talking, and my mother reported what he had said, and I guess that's when Daddy remembered that he knew Sol Butler, but I don't think he knew where he went to school. But I don't know that. I'm just, knowing my father, I just assumed that he didn't. Unless Sol Butler came to his office, he probably wouldn't, you know. Although he was always interested in sports.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody else had been there, I was told. No other black had been there until I got there after Sol Butler. But I don't know that for a fact.
There had been a few other African-American students, but as far as we can tell in the records, you were the first African-American female to graduate from UD. So Sol Butler was the first male and graduated in 1919. And then, according to the research, it looks like you're the first African-American female to graduate. And
that's what I was told.
1947. Mm-hmm. You were told that at the time?
Oh, yeah. I was told I was the first female to go there, first black female. Dr. Welch said that.
Okay.
Is he still alive?
No.
I didn't think so.
No.
If I've been out of there for over 50 years, I don't think he would be alive. I didn't think so, but I thought I'd ask anyway.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
It was very nice.
And Dr. Robert Smith, who was the person teaching the Bible class, you mentioned taking both years, was he the chaplain as well?
I don't remember.
And did you go to chapel? Do you remember going to?
We had to go.
Yeah. Okay.
There was no choice. You had to go to chapel.
Mm-hmm.
And when they had chapel, you were there, and they took attendance. You had to sign a slip of paper and put it in the pot as it came by.
And in dress? Kind of
Well, you were always dressed. You didn't wear pants. Mm-hmm. Only time you got to wear pants or jeans was on the weekend, Saturday. And you were supposed to go to church on Sunday. And then after that, you could do what you wanted to do. Because we always go up to the park and eat that bag lunch of sardines, which I haven't had a sardine since then. But, or you could go to the goats if you wanted to. But they always gave you a sack lunch or a sack dinner, I'll say. At lunchtime, you had lunch, regular lunch. And then they gave you the sack lunch that you could take and you could eat whenever you wanted to. But the restaurant, the Commons wasn't open on Sunday night. But that was fun too, because you could go up on the hill to Eagle Point, I think it was. I think that's what it's called.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Well, then I do remember something.
Very good.
Yeah.
When you think of your time at UD, and then how do you think your experience there prepared you or failed to prepare you for what came next, for where you went in life after UD?
Well, they trained me so that I could be a teacher, and that was my profession, and I enjoyed that. After the first couple of months or so, I probably began to enjoy it a little bit more. But the first year I was there, no. The first two or three months were not what I expected college to be like. And it was not like any of my experiences at Wisconsin. But then I knew some people that were in school there. They were older than I was, but at least I knew them. And I was living in a co-op, and it was an interracial co-op. So I met the other people that my friends, and that they were older than I didn't know, they were not close friends. They were just the children of the parents that my parents knew, and I had met them. But we were friendly, and they were older than I was. But I went there as a freshman, and they ranged from being juniors to seniors, so they were older. But there were some people from my high school that I knew very well, and they also went to Wisconsin. So we sort of hung out together. So that was fine. But when I went to Dubuque, I didn't know anyone, and I did not expect to be the only one. But I was. And I adjusted, and I've adjusted ever since. And still, I was the only one at many of the schools that I've taught here. I was the second one, I think, that was at South Shores. And then we had a couple of others, but not many. But most of my children were Caucasian. And finally, they were a mixture of Caucasian and Mexican. And we went on this program where the schools had to be integrated. And we got children from another school, and our children had to go to another school. But mainly, our children stayed and the other children came from the other schools in San Pedro. So that we had a mixed, we not only had, well, we didn't have a mixed faculty. I was there. One of the music teachers was there. She was black. And we had a Mexican teacher, I think, or a Hispanic teacher, I should say. And that was it. I was the only one for a long time until the female music teacher came. Because the first one wasn't black. She was. She stayed there, and she retired the year before I did. And she did all the music for our plays. And she even wrote a play. And we did it. I was the director. We had a dance teacher, we had an art teacher, we had a scenery teacher, all that sort of stuff. We had that. But my experience coming here, I've been in black schools, I've been in white schools, I've been in mixed schools, I've been in, I haven't been in a predominantly Mexican school. When I moved in here, I was it. Mm-hmm. Until came. Maury Wills came. He was in the front building for a while.
The baseball player?
Mm-hmm.
He taught here at the school?
Oh, no, he didn't teach. I'm talking about coming here to this building when I moved in here in the 70s.
My goodness.
It was all white. Well, Rancho Palos Verdes is mostly Caucasian.
Right.
The school was Caucasian. We didn't have any black students. And I was the teacher. And they'd had janitors that were black and Mexican and male and female, because it's a small school. And one of the, well, the last music teacher was black, and we were the only two there for the longest time. We had a couple of Mexican teachers, and I'm trying to think. When they went into integration, then we got more black students and Spanish students, Mexican students, Spanish, whatever, bused in.
Mm-hmm.
And for, I guess, some of the teachers that were there, that was a new experience. It wasn't for me. I think I've been mixed up so, as far as teaching goes, and even as my own life. I've had different friends from different races, and especially as an adult, not so much as an elementary school child, but as a high school, it was mostly black and white, but it was mostly white rather than black. And then college has been a mixture, and I've never been to an all-black college. All my colleges have been mixed, and I mixed up Dubuque as a female.
Right.
But I've had good experiences all my life. I've got good friends all over.
Right.
So, you know.
Do you have any questions for me in the project we're working on, or?
Well, I got a catalog that was male, and it was mostly male. And I know I've been interviewed on the telephone, and I'm being interviewed now, but what will that be? It's supposed to be for some exhibit, at least that's what I was told when they first called me.
Right. Yeah, and I mailed you that catalog with the Saul
yes.
Butler and Paul Robeson,
right.
and that kind of came about because I...
Paul Robeson, did he go there?
He did not, but I met a gentleman whose father played football with Paul Robeson, and this gentleman gave me some objects, some photographs of his father from Paul Robeson, this incredible gift. And so I wanted to find some way to connect it with
yeah.
UD, and when I started looking into it, I realized that Paul Robeson entered school the same year that Saul Butler entered school, and the more I looked, the more I realized how similar their experiences were
really,
in many
yeah.
ways. And so we mounted an exhibition that kind of looked at their shared experience in college. And so when I realized in doing the research for Saul Butler that he and his brother were the first African Americans,
yeah.
that it would be great to mount an exhibition in the fall of 2015 that celebrated 100 years and looked at 100 years of African American history at the university. And so that we've been planning that for a year and a half now
yeah.
or so. And so this last semester, a colleague of mine, John, and I co-taught an oral history class, and we had students work their way up to interview African American alums from UD. And so they conducted interviews over the phone, and then we traveled into Chicago and had face-to-face interviews with alums from the 60s and 70s and 1980s. And we have students who've been doing research, and so we had this last summer we had a student on a fellowship that devoted hundreds of hours going through the archives and through the old yearbooks and going through the presidential papers to try to find out when African American students were here and find anything that kind of talked about what that experience might have been
mm-hmm.
like, especially from 1915 to about 1965. And then since then it's been a lot of interviewing people. We want people's stories to kind of help tell the story of the African-American experiences at UD. And so your story will help us tell the story as well. And we'll have an exhibition that will it'll appear in the new Performing Arts Building, which that's one of, when you mentioned the school changing,
yeah,
one
yeah.
of the more dramatic ways it's changed in the past 15 years is that we have this incredible Performing Arts Building now that has a wonderful performance space that seats, I don't know, 600, 700 people, but the acoustics are just amazing. I mean, it's
mm.
probably, acoustically, it's probably the best performance space in, I don't know, a 40-mile radius or something. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's really wonderful acoustics and gorgeous. And the building also has a black box theater for theater productions and has a band, spaces for bands and choir rooms, and it includes a gallery space that is where the Saul Butler Paul Robeson, that's where that exhibition was held, and it's mostly art exhibits that go in there, and it's got this glass wall, so even if you don't walk in, you can take in a lot of it from the outside as you're filtering past. But we're hoping for this exhibition, it's called Ahead of the Curve, 100 Years of African American History at UD, and much of it will be in that gallery. And then we'll have much of it in the library, and then we'll have kind of satellite displays around campus that try to kind of unite the thing as a whole. And so I'm very excited about it, and we're going to put together a catalog as well. So we'll have some students that have been doing the research that will write some pieces for it that will help tell the history. I'll probably write a piece. I'm hoping to get an outside researcher to try to situate UD in terms of its African American history, how it compares to other schools, and in terms of how its diversity and whatnot. And then probably the bulk of it will be transcriptions of interviews like of yours, of people telling their experience at UD, and so having these stories contained in this exhibition catalog, and full of photographs. And so if you happen upon a photograph from college and would like to share it, that might be the kind of thing that could be included in the catalog.
I'd have to look and see. Mostly, any picture that I would have probably come from the book, the manual you get every year. I can't remember. I'd have to look and see. I haven't been through a lot of my pictures, so I don't know. I'm sure I must have taken pictures while I was there. I know I must have had a camera, because we've had cameras ever since we were in high school, my sister and I. No, I would like to see that exhibit if you don't wait too long.
Yes,
and I can travel.
Right. Well, I will keep you posted. Right now it's scheduled for October and November of this year, for cover homecoming, so I'll keep you posted, and I'll for sure make sure you get a catalog.
Yes, so please do. You can see. I got something. That, heck, what was it? It was a catalog with Saul Butler in there and Paul Robeson, but there was something, maybe it was for homecoming. I got a pamphlet or a booklet that talked about the theater and what the price of the theater tickets would be and who was going to be where, or it hadn't been decided, something like that. And I kept thinking, that is going to be on the campus? I said, that means this school has expanded. One of the gals that was there when I went the last time in 50, who was it, Wisty? What's the other girl's name? The two of them were inseparable. They were good friends. Oh dear. Westfell was her last name. I can't think of her first name now. But the next time I go through my booklet, I'll have to look. I'm sure both of their picked Virginia. Her name was Virginia also. Virginia Cato? I'm not sure about the last name. Maybe I've got her mixed up with another Virginia. But one was named Virginia and the other was Westy. Because of her last name, she was called Westy. I don't remember her last name. I don't remember her first name. I'd have to look it up. But I saw, when I went back, I saw Westy. I think the other one was dead. I think she had died. But Westy was the one that I saw. And we did sort of keep up with one another, with notes here and there. But that dropped off. So I don't know if she's still alive. She probably doesn't know whether I'm still alive. But I would like to go. I don't know if I'll be able to. I had to cancel a trip because of this wheelchair. If I were still on the walker or my cane, I would make it one way or the other. I'd get somebody to come with me just in case. But with this, I don't know. But I would really love to go back and see this, because what a drastic change from when I was there. There was Severance Hall. There was Stephens Hall. There was Peter Commons.
Van Vliet
was there. Did I leave out somebody?
The library. Oh.
Well, the library was there, but what was the name of the library? Or was there a name? Wasn't that in one of the other buildings?
There's a Couchman Library, but Couchman came after you, you left.
I haven't heard of that one. Couchman, wasn't he, was he a minister at one of the churches there?
Well, you remember him. He was a minister in one of the churches, and he became the president in the 50s.
Yes, I remember the name. But I thought, I'm pretty sure he was a minister at one of the churches there.
He was. Did you attend church when you were at UD?
Well, we had to attend chapel, and there were times when we had to attend another church. There was some service or something that we were required to go to. And if we weren't required, we were requested, which was the same thing.
Was it Westminster Presbyterian across the street from campus?
This was downtown. This was downtown, but I don't remember. I just know I went to some of the church downtown that we as students had to go to, but I don't remember why. I know we had to make chapel every other day or every day. We had to make chapel at least 3 times a week, at least. We soon learned how to do that. I won't give our secret away. Is chapel still required?
It is not. It's 3 days a week for undergraduate. There's a seminary chapel too. That's Tuesdays and Thursdays, I believe. But Monday, Wednesday, Friday, at 11 is the undergraduate chapel. Mm-hmm. And there are probably when I go, there is anywhere between 20 and 40 people, I would say, who are in attendance.
When I went, everybody was there, and you had to sign pieces of paper that you were there and put in this basket. Well, now you know what probably happened if somebody didn't want to go.
I can imagine. Took
turns, you know. Right. And they gave you one piece of paper, but we always found a way of getting 2 pieces of paper and we could put somebody else's name down, you know.
Right.
That sort of thing. We went. Well, I went on many a time, but there were times when, you know, you don't feel like going, so you don't go. You get somebody to go because you call for them.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You cover.
That's right. You take turns. That was my first experience of being forced into, well, not physically forced, but you had to go. I mean, they kept attendance those days. So you had to have so many days of having gone.
Right.
And if you were sick, then you had to let the the house mother know that you weren't able to go and you should be in your room, or you could sit out on the lawn because you didn't feel well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure Mrs. Parsons, that's who she was. She was our dorm.
Okay. How old a woman was she?
She wasn't young.
Okay.
She wasn't young. I would say probably she was in her 50s, maybe. I don't think it would be 40. I think it would be in 50s, closer to 60. She had white hair, or mixed gray hair, and she was a nice build. She wasn't fat, but she wasn't, you know, skinny.
Right.
She wasn't young, but she was definitely middle-aged, we'll say.
Okay.
Very nice. Very nice. But, you know, she knew the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And you knew the rules. And you did follow the rules. Or Mrs. Parsons would help you to remember the rules.
She's not a woman to mess with.
No, exactly. Just as nice as she could be. Mm-hmm. Nice as she could be. Do anything in the world for you, to help you, etc. But you followed the rules.
Right.
Period. That was it. Period.
Well, earlier you mentioned when you came back for the 25th and then 50th mm-hmm. anniversary and saw the campus was much more diverse than it had been when you were bringing, you know, there wasn't much diversity when you were there.
Mm-hmm.
It's now, like I said, there's probably about 1,800 undergraduates, and I would estimate that there's at least a couple hundred African American students and probably another couple hundred Latino students. I mean, it's a especially in terms of Iowa, it's a very diverse campus, mm-hmm. and there's a very sizable number of students of color on campus now, and so you probably
rarely saw any, even when we went into town, very rarely did we see Mexicans or blacks. Very seldom. Everybody was Caucasian, just about. But and also on campus. But you know, it was something that it didn't bother me. It did at first, because I resented being put in the nurse's room the first year. I really resented that. But then after I made friends, even though they were not upperclassmen, they were still friends, and they're still my friends. And I still stay in touch with some of them, not all of them. But as I say, the one that I do stay in touch with or stays in touch with me, I find out what happened to the people we ran around with and whose husband has died and all that sort of stuff, whose children have gotten married. So I keep up with that. But I had a good time when I was there. You know, after the first month or two, you know, I had made friends, and I got over the fact that I felt that I wasn't being, what is it? There's a word I was going to use. What was say, I wasn't being segregated. Mm-hmm. I was just being helped to adjust, we'll put it that way, to adjust to being in an all-white school. Well, I didn't have to adjust to that because I had been in all-white schools before. Not as elementary school, but in high school and in the colleges that I went to before I came to Dubuque, you know. So that was no problem. No problem whatsoever. It hasn't been since. And still the same, so.
Do you mind if I get take a, the light's really nice coming through here. Do you mind if I take a photograph of you right now?
No, I don't mind.
Okay. Just I've been sitting here and admiring the lights, kind of a low raking lights, and I think if I
don't take good pictures anymore.
Oh, well, you look nice, and so. Maybe one more, just to...
All right.
Let me just check that to see if that... That's a little, got a little blurry. Let me do this one again.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome. If it turns out lousy, don't print it.
Okay. I don't think it looks good to me, so, but I can run it by you just to, yeah.
Well, I want to get a booklet.
Yeah. I will for sure. Let me see if I can figure out how to stop this without erasing anything. I think I just press here.